Chapter 4. The Higher Trusts. Everyone is entitled to universal rights and freedom. The essential attribute of freedom is to not have to give up entitlement without consent. An implied trust is breached every time pricks rig shit to their own advantage, thereby abusing extraordinary influence against the universal rights of others. There are three situations in our society to which extraordinary influence, power, and advantage automatically appertain. Wealth, public authority, and public information each give rise to a level of influence that is unmatched in persons who do not possess any of those attributes. That they come with such extraordinary influence is evident to every kid in second grade. The author hereafter will rely upon this reference so frequently that at times it will be signified as open quotes, ibid, close quotes. This extraordinary influence comes with an inevitable extraordinary opportunity for abuse. So it must come together with a corresponding responsibility that it never be abused by the entrusted individual for their personal benefit, where their advantage taken diminishes the universal rights of any other person without that other's consent. Subheading, wealth. There is an obvious power that exudes from wealth, and in degree, it bears direct proportion. In exactly the same way that most rockers don't discuss tinnitus, most wealthy do not admit to the advantages that come with their affluence. These include extraordinary access to and influence over politicians, and the ability to gang up and then accumulate and hoard wealth at all by, for instance, getting the jump on market profit opportunities that are not available to those without immediate financing. I find very apt the turn of phrase fashioned by Adam Smith, the philosopher who introduced the concept of the invisible hand. Although it is a matter of fact too obvious to require any instances to prove it, Smith said, most wealthy people and 5/9 of the U.S. Supreme Court, as evidenced by Citizens United, a 2010 case that eradicated major limits on election campaign spending, are in denial that any such power comes with wealth. Although a majority of wealthy people may deny their extraordinary power, a minority abuse it constantly and for all its worth. Whether they poison land or water, or simply ignore and abuse the hundreds of millions who are sick and dying in squalor, their wealth has been taken from all others who remain diminished by abuse of the obvious power of the wealthy to take advantage unto themselves. Trumpeting their freedom, that has been protected for them by us all, they take wealth for themselves, disregarding the true cost of freedom, the responsibility to accord that same freedom to all others. Wealth implies the extraordinary power to unfairly impose upon or diminish the universal rights of others, and sometimes all others, on earth. Wealth comes from the earth, and most often it is by the toil of or in selling necessaries to working people. Wealth is accumulated within the security of the institutions of government that the people provide and maintain with their taxes for the benefit of us all. People assure freedom to pursue wealth, entrusting that it be pursued responsibly. Therefore, the extraordinary power of wealth must be exercised only in the utmost good faith, that is, in trust. The abuse of that trust to the diminishment of the universal rights of any others is a breach of the trust and of the fiduciary duty. Wealth is not a problem. It is miraculous, but it comes in trust. One of the first duties of all wealth must be to provide in fair portion for the accordance of universal rights to us all. Good wealth pays its fair share to fulfill the responsibilities of freedom. Any who selfishly hoard in disregard of this responsibility are in breach of this fiduciary duty. These would be pricks. For those seeking more information, Dark Money by Jane Meyer is a good start. As is aptly demonstrated by their prosperity, freedom has worked especially well for the wealthy, and the good among them will be delighted to pay the true costs of that freedom. But it is our responsibility to require that that same fair share be paid by them all. Wealth not only may, it must, pay its share in direct proportion, no more than that, but not a bit less, to fully accord, restore, and maintain universal rights for all. Subheading, Public Authority. Everybody knows that wealth isn't the only way that things get rigged. Even more obvious power is entrusted to those appointed to government authority. The authority we struggled so mightily to wrest from kings at no small cost, and that we lend back to our government only upon the strictest conditions. Authority is granted by people to the government to be exercised for the benefit of all citizens, of all of their descendants and all of the commons. Among authorities' highest duties must be the duty to accord and maintain universal rights. Public authority provides extraordinary power and influence, and it too includes the power to abuse that authority for personal advancement or for the benefit of separate classes of persons without regard for the interests of others. Ibid. We need only look at the pollution of the Athabasca tar sands tailings ponds or the atrocities committed under Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Therefore, public authority comes to one in trust and must be exercised only in the utmost good faith. This duty falls upon all public officials, all officials appointed by them, and anybody else who is entrusted with the execution of public authority. Abuse of the power of public authority is a breach of trust, and is thus a breach of a fiduciary duty. Common examples include preferring certain industries regardless of their true cost to public health, guns, environment, fossil fuel, or fiscal security, banking deregulation. That these breaches of trust usually correspond with officials receiving political support and contribution is again a matter of fact too obvious to require any instances to prove it. Ibid. The majority in government probably deny abuse of their power, though they too very likely act in the service of its abusers. A minority absolutely abuses it on behalf of particular interests that do not necessarily accord with and may go against the universal rights of all people, their descendants, and the commons. Most unfortunately, these are more pricks. Once again, dark money is offered as a primer. I was most interested to see the involvement of United States Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia in this cabal. Universal rights, diminished by the abuse of public authority, must be restored and the abusers made to account for their breach of the fiduciary duty. Subheading: Public Information. I read the news today, oh boy. Democracy, to function successfully, requires a properly informed electorate. It requires reliable information about both government policy and any private behavior in which public regulation has an interest. The public must know what goes on, so that they may form opinions about whether proper regulation is being observed. Therein lies another extraordinary opportunity for abuse of influence: the avoidance of proper scrutiny by the manipulation of public awareness. Public information provides an extraordinary opportunity for abuse because the less selective in the audience are putty in the hands of those in power. The discerning and inquisitive find their own advice, though they might be wary, as is often misattributed to Mark Twain: if you don't read the newspaper, you are uninformed. If you do read the newspaper, you are misinformed. Still, today, reliable information, as well as every other kind, is pretty much at our fingertips, if only fingertips knew where to click and where not. Unfortunately, huge swaths of the audience are not discerning, but are ready vessels, wide open to persuasive suggestion, whether by domestic industrial titans or Vladimir Putin. These people embrace information not on the basis of its accuracy and reliability, but merely because it is what's in the news. For example, Fox News Network declares President Obama is a Muslim with no legitimate birth certificate, oil and gas corporation ExxonMobil cares deeply about climate change, and everything is fair and balanced. Social media is swamped by these misdirections. Ibid. Just check your Facebook feed to read about chemtrails, the anti-vax movement, and the conspiracy theory that human-caused climate change is a fraud by Chinese, like David Suzuki, to obtain hundreds of billions in university grants. People are swayed en masse by the information that is dished up to them by networks. Some networks are careless about what they say, claiming, "We are only reporting the news." Within other networks, stories are cooked up that spin sympathetically with the private or political interests that they represent. The power of public information is actively manipulated to whittle and hew public knowledge, and thus train public awareness. Communications professionals are commercially and professionally obliged to promote the interests of their clients, whether private parties or political movements, whose private interests do not necessarily coincide with those of the electorate or of the commons. But there are responsibilities that trump the private, the professional, and the commercial. Because democracy is utterly dependent upon an accurately informed electorate, intentionally messing with public information is subversive of democracy. It need not be repeated to which class such subversives relegate themselves. Ibid. Public information professionals, including politicians, educators, clerics, and the media, take every opportunity to say whatever they want, whether it's verified, balanced, completely frank, or completely the contrary. Politicians and privateers are held accountable for their misleading spin about as often as cell phone planes crash airliners. Abusers take that opportunity incessantly, self-servingly, and excuse information as free speech. There is no connection between tobacco and lung disease. There is no proven scientific relationship between burning fossil fuels and climate change. Clean coal is better for the environment than wind generators, and it doesn't matter anyway because carbon capture technology is really taking off. They need prove nothing. Because as Jim Hogan points out in Climate Cover-Up, it is sufficient to their selfish purposes merely to raise doubt. Public information professionals are trusted by the public to provide facts and opinions. They know and intend that their facts and opinions will be relied upon as having been provided in good faith. This includes the opportunity to spin the entrusted information. The extraordinary power and influence of public information must not be abused for personal advancement or for the benefit of exclusive persons or groups, disregarding the common obligation of free people to the universal rights of all. The influence must be exercised only in the utmost good faith. Confounding public awareness by misinformation is abuse of the influence of public information. It is a breach of trust, and thus a breach of the fiduciary duty. Journalism is our most important institution for holding to account both private and public officials. The people's primary tool for keeping officials responsible must not be turned against the people, subverting their democracy by perverting their information. This perversion must never be excused by such misbegotten claims as free speech. The cult that perverts free speech to protect deceit must be cured of its bloat and made to accord with the responsibilities of freedom and with universal rights. Subheading: A World You Can Trust. Wealth, public authority, and public information are entrusted knowing that tremendous, extraordinary influence inevitably comes with each. They exist in our culture because people create them. People create wealth by their labors and other economic activity. People lend authority to government, and people entrust public information they require to professionals, each of whom must assume the coinciding obligation, utmost good faith. What people have created and have given up in trust must not be accepted by the trustees except on the condition that the universal rights and responsibilities of freedom are completely respected. Acceptance of the benefits, whether of freedom or of a higher trust, but not their proper coincidental responsibilities, defines the prick. The trusts imply a right and, moreover, a responsibility to put an end to all such abuse of advantage. Here, we might look at ourselves. The highest trust is freedom. Freedom is the basket that holds all the other trusts. It is the unique situation in our world by which extraordinary influence, power, and advantage automatically appertain to an entire society. Those of us who enjoy it possess an invincible power to hold unto ourselves the advantages of freedom. We are deep over our heads in these advantages, so deep that we must stockpile our wealth in huge vaults beneath mountains, while in Darfur, dusty breasts on skeletons with skin yield only dying whimpers. All of us who have the benefits of freedom are freedom's trustees. We must discharge our duty to pay freedom's true cost by ensuring it for all others as for ourselves, with only the utmost good faith. If any of us is entitled to universal rights and freedom, then we all are. Long-standing common law in the public trust doctrine provides that government holds essential natural resources in trust for the people. It ought to be our guide in the emergence of freedom and universal rights being recognized as resources so essential to constitutional democracy that they too must be administered as a public trust. If these rights and responsibilities are admitted, then there follow certain consequences. Among the consequences will be the conspicuously many objectors, their selfish objections to be met, their contrived obstacles to be overcome. In the same way that our responsibility to properly care for our children is not diminished by our uncertainty at times about how best to provide that care, our responsibility to all others to act on behalf of the victims of pricks is not abated by not knowing yet, in any particular case, how to proceed. But is it fair to have a duty imposed upon us that we have no idea how to discharge? It is said that philosopher Immanuel Kant thought, ought implies can, and therefore cannot implies has no duty. If Kant is right, then I must be wrong, and we can't have a duty that seems impossible to perform. Whether that is what Kant meant, I can't say, but it seems clear to me that even when we don't know our way, once it seems quite likely that we have a duty, we must find our way. Neither are our responsibilities diminished by our failure to have acted upon them honestly in the past. Having been wrong does not require that we continue to be wrong, merely to be consistent. That we have unjustly forced our culture upon others in the past cannot exonerate us from properly according universal rights now and onward. Obstacles and objections will probably be endless. However, I expect that, as well, proper claims will come forward that are undeniable and will be carried forward until they, too, are taken for granted. It's now wonderfully common in many places that homosexuals are entitled to the same respect as everyone else, no matter whom they may love. When my mom was born, it was a different story. But did my mom have a duty to stick up for Oscar Wilde or Truman Capote? Was she morally excused or even forbidden from sticking up for them because so many others at the time thought they were? Is duty a matter of common opinion blowing in the winds of popularity? Are rights? For a current example of another commonly accepted crime against which we might invoke universal rights, let us consider the protection of young women from having their clitorises sliced away. When that young woman shows up at our border, we must let her in or follow her back home and put our foot down on her behalf. If any person is in physical danger sufficiently to establish a refugee status, these young women must be. Soon these women will learn that they have a choice, and they will find out to whom near them they may turn for help. We will have demonstrated that justice is available to those who demand it, and that we may be relied upon to ensure that the right is accorded. Within a generation, we will have gone from indulging in cruel oblivion to seeing physical security for all adolescent girls becoming wonderfully common, too. Then, as we ensure the security of adolescent female persons, we will learn the proper terms of our responsible interference on behalf of all victims of pricks. From that experience, we will encounter a full range of obstacles, and we will learn what to do with them. We will learn the limits of sovereignty, of religion, of wealth, and of authority. And as well, we will determine the proper extent for the use of sufficient force, notwithstanding any self-serving objections. After that, we need only go the rest of the way. The costs of establishing such development may seem high. If we thought selling fossil fuels for profit faced an inconvenient truth in climate science, then it will be easy to imagine inconvenience in fulfilling the higher trusts. But the security and productivity that will be developed over the years by the recognition of the higher trusts will cultivate wealth enough to dwarf any that could ever be hoarded. Hoarding is the wet dream of economic accomplishment. It is illusory wealth because it comes without the goodwill of its creators, and thus always comes with the anxiety of its loss. Good money is not hoarded. It is earned, but only after it pays its fair share for both the preservation of universal rights and the proper costs of the institutions that protect freedom for us all. Then may good money be saved. It is within the framework of those institutions we support with our taxes that wealth was produced and accumulated. Once wealth has paid its fair share in support of those institutions, then good money may be accumulated, endlessly, by any to whom the hobby appeals. The costs of complete world development certainly could not exceed the current costs of world military. Unfortunately, it will take the genius of another generation to realize that the best defense is placing goodness on the offense. If sharing is imagined to be too expensive, watch carefully the true costs of not sharing as they unfold horrifyingly around us. Go holiday in the slums of Dhaka, of Jakarta, or of Mumbai. But if we live up to our duties as the beneficiaries of freedom, when all upon earth are well cared for, mission ready, and pulling heartily on the oars, wealth will profuse forth. I think economists call it productivity. We will have fulfilled the democratic ideal, demonstrating the highest faith in ordinary people to be great when provided with the opportunity, when they know the game is not rigged against them. Anything else is very likely advantage abuse and hoarding. We may imagine no possessions, as John Lennon proposed, and we should, but I do not recommend it as a policy at this time. Rather, for now, I recommend sharing, that is, being responsible with freedom and with universal rights. Pricks, who have profited by taking liberties unpaid for, and by disregarding universal rights, will relinquish the full portion of their ill-gotten wealth to the commons, and we all will become their successor stakeholders, for good. That will have been a good day at the office. Of the many obstacles in our society that deter us from exercising our responsibilities to all others, and so shelter both pricks and their misbehavior, there are two important examples that ought to be considered closely. Corporations, the limits to their obligations, are one. The other is sovereignty. A closer look at both these phenomena may chasten two such stupefying obstacles.